All right, my big prediction for the end of the book. There is a perpendicularity. We go through it, or Dusk solo goes through it, and finds not first of the sun, but second of the sun. And it is an even more primitive civilization than his. And he takes it upon himself to defend said civilization before the Malwish can discover it, and destroys the perpendicularity to defend them.
Welcome back to Following Noadon, the Stormlight Podcast. We are in Isles of the Emberdark, chapters 45 through 48 this week on episode 287. I'm Elliot, and I'm here as always with Paul and Trevor as we enter into the back quarter, final 20%-ish of Isles of the Emberdark. Paul, Trevor, how are you guys doing?
This is Paul here, prediction winner from last episode. Here to say I'm having a good week. Hello, 2026. I know we've already had an episode that came out, but I forgot to say it, just like I was a week late saying Merry Christmas. So I'm a week late saying Happy New Year to everybody. Man, crazy to think y'all will be listening to this in 2026, whenever it hasn't even happened yet.
We're already halfway through January, Paul. You're late.
Yeah, I'm very late. I understand. I'm sorry, everyone. Anyways, I'm doing good. Apparently, we're talking about bugs this episode. Lots and of I'm bugs. Ready for it.
Can we get Paul Crocodile Hunter voice back for talking about bugs? I missed
there
that.
There we go.
I've given my fun fact about the bullet ants, right? I already did that.
You did, yes.
Okay. Man, I need to find another.
Unless you did that just for me. I think you did that on the podcast, though.
I think I did.
Now, you need a fun fact now about some bug that bites you, and then now you have telepathic communications with it.
There is. I don't know anything about it. I just knew that.
Are you going to tell me this is real?
Well, no, not telepathic powers. No, I hate to break that to you. I do know that there is some bug. I don't know the specifics. I do know that there is a bug that, like, essentially latches onto much larger like prey and animals and like mind controls them. So that's kind of going on.
Are you talking about the air mushrooms that like live in their brain and control them? Or are you talking about a bug that does that?
I think it's a bug. Yeah, hold on.
Because there's parasites that control bugs. I know that. You just have to watch the first episode of The Last of Us to find that out.
Maybe it's just parasites in general. There are several parasites who infect other insects mostly, and do things like that. That's from a very quick 2-second Google search.
We already had the invested tapeworms discussion earlier.
Yes, we did.
That was a good discussion.
Yuck, still gives me the creepies. Trevor, I don't think I've asked you how you're doing. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. We are exiting the final curve of a 400 and entering the last straightaway where your legs are burning.
Oh, yes.
And it is all just pure willpower at this point. Your body is doing the same movement over and over, and it's all mental at this point. Your body can do it. You just have to make it. Not that this book is like strenuous or anything. It's just when you said that we're entering the final 20%, I was like, okay, what would that be in a race? Oh, I know what that would be in a race, where you are trying your absolute hardest to maintain your form on your final straightaway. And you would like nothing except for the next 10 seconds to go by as fast as possible. Anyway, I'm doing well. As you could probably tell from last week, I'm recovering from, I don't know, some sort of cough or flu or whatever you want to call it. And yeah, I'm doing well.
You painted a really good picture there, Trevor. I feel like I have a very vivid imagery of finishing this book or something, even though I never ran track ever, but I have run around a track, just not as an organized sport.
Anyone who has
quite challenging
run track or cross country competitively will know the exact feeling I was trying to convey. Everyone has been there who has run it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I will say this, it feels a lot less tedious than that can feel, or exhausting, but quite exciting and quite interesting. Chrysalis and Dusk have an alliance now.
No.
Well, alliance, let me rephrase that, connection.
Yes.
They have a connection now. That's what I was meaning.
Let me summarize it before we talk about it, because it's definitely parasitic. It's not what's the other word?
Voluntary or something.
What's the one where they both benefit from it?
Equilateral? Is that a thing? No, that's not right.
What's the name of the relationship where like the little birds sit in the hippo's mouth and clean the hippo's mouth and the hippo doesn't eat it and like
symbiotic?
Thank you.
Symbiotic.
This is not a symbiotic relationship, even though Chrysalis is trying to sell it as one. Okay, here comes my summary. We're back from entering the cave of death with Starling. Well, actually, we have to walk back first. We walk back, and then we're back. And then Chrysalis bites Dusk, completely freaks him out. And we learn a valuable piece of information that even if Chrysalis bites Dusk, Roque can block said bug from hearing his mind, even if he's bitten. That's nice to know. And by the end of this episode, we have Dusk has eliminated Danger as an option and Miss Bug God as an option, and only considering Starling. So Chrysalis reveals a decent amount to Dusk and says, hey, we could help each other out. I know about your people. I have some kremlings on your planet. I've never been there, but I've heard good things or whatever. We can help each other out. And after that whole conversation, Dusk is like, whoa. That like none of this up until this point blew Dusk away. He sits and takes a second after talking to Chrysalis. He's like, bug God, I can understand that. I forget the rest of this. I got that. That clicked with me, and that freaked me out. And then, yeah, the intensifier shows up, and that's the episode.
I had a moment of panic myself reading that scene where Dusk realizes he's just gotten bit by something. He's like, oh, I can't believe it. I'm so out of like practice. I didn't routinely change my clothes and like check my surroundings or whatever it was. And now he's been bit by a bug. And it's like, well, this is the end. I've been bit by a single bug. This is where I lose to Patchy or whatever it is.
He didn't check for ticks.
Yeah, exactly. And assumes he's instantly dead. And I feared that too, but I'm like, surely he's not. I thought we might have some moment at this while I was reading it live. I thought maybe like Starling or someone was going to step in and save him somehow or what. But then we get a voice, and I was not expecting that voice to be Chrysalis's voice. I thought we were going to get some other reveal with Patchy or all these, you know, something else. But it's Chrysalis, and yeah, I wasn't expecting that. But Trevor, last episode you were all on this, like, Chrysalis is going to betray Train. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, I don't think so. And yeah, Chrysalis is really working the room, if you will, with every character involved with every character at the moment.
Certainly trying to, yes.
So this is this and the like talking as everybody is like, I feel like I don't know if seeing this on screen, like a visual adaptation of this would be helpful or what, but I'm like, there's a lot going on with Chrysalis that it's quite difficult to keep up. I don't fully know what happened. So I also had a question. How does this connection actually work through a bite? Did they explain it? We joked about parasites earlier, but like in my head, if this bug bit Dusk, wouldn't it only last for like a little amount of short, like not a definite amount of time? Like in my head, I'm thinking you get bit by a bug and there's some small amount of mild venom or form substance or whatever.
This chrysalis, this little beetle, has needles and it pokes Dusk in its nervous system and they like stays in him while they talk, and then she pulls it out and they can't talk anymore.
Okay. And that I missed that detail, and that makes way more sense to me logically.
And tiniest of spoilers, we're going to see this again and it'll be very obvious spoilers. When you see it again.
Oh my gosh.
The
Chrysalis is still alive.
I know. It's very obvious when you see it again that Dusk can only hear Chrysalis, like Trevor said, while the fangs are actively embedded in his nervous system.
Right.
Okay. That I'm glad I asked, because that didn't really make sense to me, especially after we've had so many magic systems that I feel like we jump through hoops to make sure it follows rules at times.
Well, it's,
and I was like, how would a bite, I was like, is it through, in my head it was through like the venom or whatever, like mild, you know, you get a bug bite and it swells or whatever, like that. And I'm like, that doesn't feel like it has very sturdy legs to stand on how they could connect and communicate. But this makes way more sense. Like it's an actual connection.
Right. The way Chrysalis describes it is she makes a joke actually, that it's a lowercase C connection, that we don't have a capital C connection. Mm-hmm. So I have to make a lowercase C connection and literally connect to your nervous system, and then we can talk.
And they are able to talk like in their minds, which is
yes,
crazy and a bit creepy.
And
nothing like getting stabbed by a bug and then
have it read your mind.
Thinking to it, you know?
Yeah, that would freak me out for sure. Dusk, though, stays quite calm and very mentally disciplined, because
yes,
think about this, he's actively trying to keep his cards close to his chest. He's got information that not everyone has, and he's fighting hard to maintain that. And when a sleepless is now reading his mind, he has to very aggressively discipline his thoughts so he doesn't give away his trump cards.
Yeah, I actually got lost here a little bit when I really thought about this. I'm sure you're not really supposed to think about this, and this is the beginning of the Sandra Lynch, you're supposed to keep reading. But I sat and thought about this for a second. If Dusk thinks about the other perpendicularity, not even like admits that it exists or whatever, if he thinks about it, about his journey, about where he's been, where he's come from, then Chrysalis would know. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But we do learn that Roque can shield him from the sleepless even while the antenna are stuck in his leg or wherever she sticks them, I don't remember, which seems very useful. Really nice. I wonder if Roque eats the bug, if then the bug would then hear Roque's thoughts, because it'd be touching its nervous system.
You can ask Brandon at the next convention or book signing.
I just might. The reason why one of the reasons why I think Chrysalis will end up being an antagonist here is because we leave her kind of like ticked off. Funny. And
gross.
They have had their little powwow mentally, and then Dusk says, okay, leave me alone now. And she does, but she does it like resentfully. Like she's like, all right, fine, whatever. And then it's like a quick two sentence line. In chapter 47, when Dusk goes back into the tunnel, Chrysalis asks to come with, and Dusk says no. And so now I'm thinking, okay, you just ticked off a Sleepless right before the end of the book. That's not very smart. So Chrysalis has yet another reason to abandon us.
I like the way you summarized it in your overview at the beginning. With you framed it well. Chrysalis is trying to sell this as a partnership. I'll help you. You help me. We'll all get what we want.
Right.
And I think you're spot on when you say that it is absolutely not that. And I think Dusk knows that.
You're right. No, he finds that out really fast.
Dusk has learned this game by now. He has learned when people offer you things, there are other motives. There's a bigger picture. They're not telling you. And that's what leads him to get to the place where you were talking about also, where he, it doesn't take him long before he decides, yeah, I'm not going to make a deal with the Bug God.
Trevor, you mentioned all these reasons that Chrysalis has for leaving. Do you think there are any for her to not? Can you play devil's advocate on your own theory at all?
If Chrysalis was a nicer person, then she would stay. But she's not.
Okay, there you have it. There we have it, folks.
I'll give you a few thoughts, because they talk about him in these chapters. Chrysalis even opens up about it. I think Chrysalis is very vulnerable right now, much more so than Sleepless usually are. And that's really, I think, the biggest factor at this point is Chrysalis needs protection, because the Mawish have the ability to kill her and will do so on sight.
Right.
And so Chrysalis desperately needs hiding and protection, which is what she's hoping to be getting from Starling or Dusk. There was one other bit in chapter 45 that I wanted to point out. Starling and Dusk are still talking. The Chrysalis stuff happens later in chapter 45. At the beginning of chapter 45, Starling is still giving Dusk some information. And it's in that conversation that Dusk realizes truly what his trump card is. Later in the chapter, he's hiding that information from Chrysalis, but at the beginning of the chapter, he realizes just how valuable his new ability is. Yeah. Because Starling explains that while, yes, there are other abilities out there, and yes, there are scientific instruments and advances in technology and things like that, it is still pretty darn difficult to navigate in the uncharted parts of the Emberdark. Just knowing where the current is coming from, where the Nell is nothing more than a North Star. She even uses that metaphor. If you're in the middle of the ocean and you know which way north is, that's helpful, but it doesn't really help you find an island that you don't know exists or have on a map that tells you exactly where.
Right.
Dusk's ability goes much further than just sensing investiture. He can use his ability to kind of feel the currents of the current and how it bounces off of all the stuff. And he could find an island that no one else had found before, because he can feel it with his power.
He has his current sonar.
Yeah. So he realizes in this moment in chapter 45 that's valuable. That even the most advanced technologies out there, even the dragons, don't have that ability.
Yeah. I just couldn't help but remember that the navigator position on the dynamic is missing. If you remember that.
You are correct. All right, that was all I noted out of 45. 46, Starling gets back to her crew, and they've got a plan. They are so excited to tell her about this genius plan. And the plan is terrible.
This chapter, content aside, flipped point of views back and forth like 7 times. And it does like 2 pages with Dusk and the Bug God and 2 pages with Starling and back and forth and back and forth. And like, this is not typical Brandon. You must think he's in the Sander Lanch.
I was just going to say, there's your clue that this is the beginning of the Sander Lanch, because especially this book has not really done that.
Right.
We've had very fixed point of views. I don't know if that's the right way to say that.
It's been the Elantris style of Starling chapter, Dusk chapter during what Starling was doing, and then vice versa.
Yes. And all of a sudden now we are in flip-flop mode. So buckle up.
What do they talk about in the tunnel this time?
Well, the tunnel comes in chapter 47.
Oh, yeah. No, the plan. Oh,
but,
okay.
Yeah, 46 is where they start talking about the plan. And the crew is like, okay, we've got the plan. Here's how we're going to do this. Is it Z? No, Adetil is going to fake sick.
Yep.
And say, oh, you got to take me to the ether spores to revive me. And then when she's there, she's going to deactivate them all.
Correct. And by the end of the episode, Danger like calls him out on it, even though he didn't know that was their plan.
Yep. And I thought this brought up a very interesting leadership dilemma in this scenario. If put yourself in Starling's shoes here. You are the leader of a team, a team that you have a lot of faith in, that you trust, you believe in these people, they're good at what they do. But you're in a tight spot, and the team comes to you as the leader, the final decision maker, and says, we've got a plan, and you instantly realize this is a terrible plan and it's not going to work. Like, what do you do as a leader in that situation?
And the entire book, she's been trying to get them to think proactively and be more positive and like, hey, we need to address the problem. Like, yeah, I get it. It's bleak, but we need to keep attacking it. And then they do. And then she's like, not like that.
Mm-hmm. And that's tough, right? Because what does she do? If she comes down hard on this plan and says, this is dumb and here's all the reasons why, that's going to seriously squash their creativity. And all those things that she was pushing them towards, like you just said, they're going to be way less willing to do that in the future. But if you just go with the plan and you go, oh, all right, guys, let's do this. This could all end really badly. This is a tricky leadership dilemma to navigate, I think. It's very real world. I can think of instances where I've been in situations like this, where it's like, oh, what do I do now? This is not a good plan. Do I go with this, or do I try to explain why I think this is not good?
But we've spent more than 2 chapters on it, so it has to be relevant coming up. That's my theory.
Yes. Is
that we actually are going to turn off the ethers, but I don't know in what context.
I'm also left a bit puzzled on it. And I know exactly what you're talking about, Elliot, like thinking about the real world situations. I'm like, it almost gives me a little PTSD of, I'm like, do you try to fix it, or do you just like let things happen and hope for the best? Yeah.
And where I think we leave it is Starling says, this is bad. The fake sick plan is not going to work. Everybody knows that ruse. What's the Marvel's Avengers reference? Get help. Get help. We're going to do get help. No, game blank stares.
What?
Watch Avengers. There's a reference. Someone out there is going to get this reference.
Oh, no. Vague memory. It's been a while since I've watched Marvel. I am getting it. Yes.
Thank you for getting there eventually. Anyway, Starling says, this is a bad plan. We're not going to do that. I'll find a solution. That's where she kind of leaves it with them. Now, a couple of chapters later, we get to where we were referencing in a second of Danger apparently is onto their plan even before they fully came up with it themselves. And so at the end of chapter 48, Starling is in a tight spot. Very tight spot.
Even more than she admitted earlier.
Yes. But we'll get to that in a second. Back in 46. Is there anything else yet that we have here? Oh, that there was a quote that I thought was pretty appropriate. And it comes from Chrysalis. She's talking to Dusk and being pretty open with Dusk about everything. And she basically says, we gods used to be a lot more powerful. There's so much new technology out in the Cosmere that has brought the mere mortals up to maybe not quite the same playing field, but just a couple of leagues lower of the big guns. And so what she says specifically is technology has not killed the gods, but it has made them smaller.
Yeah.
And I thought, ooh, there's a good summary quote.
Dager had a similar quote like two episodes ago. And he said that, you know, the dragons used to be the highest form of cognitive beings, and they used to soar and no one else could. But now anyone with a coin and a little bit of metal can do the same things dragons can. So same vein of quote.
But then we head back into the tunnel again. What did you guys get from our latest venture into the Tunnel of Death?
That the stories of the Lore Mothers are more reliable than any book.
Ah, oral tradition versus written history.
Yes.
Yeah.
A classic debate. And Dager and Starling both seem to be pretty quick to dismiss the oral tradition.
Yeah.
And I felt for Dusk a little bit here. Our modern world we live in, at least in American culture, oral tradition is not a thing. But cultures of the past on Earth, oral tradition absolutely has been a thing. And there definitely have been centuries of stuff like Dusk is talking about where oral tradition was taken very seriously. That things were memorized in a very specific order for a reason. That was the histories, and any deviation was treated as heresy or stamped out very quickly. And so I actually am very not on the side of Starling and Dager here to quickly dismiss oral tradition. That's actually something that I respect a lot, is people who dedicate their lives to memorizing stories exactly so that they can pass on their culture and tradition. I think that kind of stuff is super cool.
You're not a Coppermind guy?
No, I am not Sazed with my stores and stores of Coppermines that I store all my memories in and then come back to.
Yeah, that's like the Elliot likes before the calculator was invented, you know, that type of situation.
I respect it. I'll say that. I do not have those abilities. My memorization abilities are very lacking. I am an engineer. I do math all the time, and I still pull up my calculator to do basic arithmetic, that kind of stuff. But I respect the hell out of people who take their tradition that seriously, that memorizing it is an entire like life career. I think that's cool.
Yeah. I agree. It is really cool. And it does, like, I feel like this book does a great job of making you feel bad for Dusk in some of these way, like situations of like, they're like just casually uprooting his whole like foundation of understanding of where the world came from and all this stuff. You know, it's kind of like, I like, let him down easy, guys. Anyways, it was, a bit ridiculous. Felt bad for the guy. This book has been like, if anything, it's just been like, this guy Dusk is out of place and not like at home with the people around him, which it makes me kind of sad for him. Poor guy, poor Dusk, you know? I mean, like, I just want him to have, like, a friend who also, like, knows all the oral traditions and is just, like, a bud, you know?
One of my favorite lines, probably in the whole book, was Starling feeling sad for Dusk. And Dusk says some line about how, I don't know what to do with the information I've been given and blah, blah, blah. And then Starling just says, oh, Dusk, that sucks. And then Dusk says, I don't think the translator worked on that word. Anyway, moving on, because he didn't understand what sucks means. I thought that was really funny.
This is really funny.
Another reveal in chapter 47, which I'll be honest, this is the third time I'm reading this, and it's still a little lost on me. The Malwish have an ether bound.
Yes.
And apparently they're not supposed to. Like, this seems to shock Starling. And my reaction to this was, oh, they only have one?
The evil Malwish Empire aren't allowed to have the ether weapons, and now they do, and that's a problem.
And there's a couple of weird references in here, like Starling, by the end of 48, Starling ends up talking with this etherbound over Skype or Zoom or whatever we're using in the Cosmere nowadays.
No, isn't she there with the intensifier?
I think it's a call.
Is she on Skype call? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a call. I don't think
she's Zoom, there. Now that we're in 2025, not
Skype. Yeah,
Skype.
Yeah, I realized I just dated myself when I said Skype.
You did.
Starling says, how are you working with the Malwish? Don't the ethers forbid this, or doesn't so-and-so stop you from doing this? And the etherbound, I forget the name, I should probably look it up here. This etherbound person goes, oh, there's ways to work around that. And apparently that's a big surprise to Starling, which I feel like maybe that's supposed to mean more to us, or maybe will mean more to us in the future than it does right now.
There's some international treaty that's forbidding this. So yet another point in the tally of these international treaties don't really mean anything, and we're working around them. We don't care.
So the big surprise. Ooh, I have some artwork of this.
There's several big surprises. Which one are you going to talk about?
There are a few, but the most relevant one in these chapters is they get down to what they think is the low point of the Tunnel of Death. It levels out, and Dager goes, oh, great. Now it's going to start going up, and we're going to come up underneath the big entity thing and find our perpendicularity. And what do they find at the bottom?
His little no entrance except on party business sign.
Yes. Yes. Let me show you what the book shows you that this sign looks like. This is blowing it up quite large. It's actually much smaller in the book. It only takes up like a half a page or a quarter of a page. But they're going through the jungle, and they come across a sign blocking the way, saying, you know, danger, don't go this way. But Dusk is floored by this. He is completely shaken. Why is this so shocking for him?
Because it's his handwriting.
More so than that, it is his own code language that no one else knows.
Yep.
And so the conclusion that he jumps to pretty quickly is something super funky is going on here, because there's no way anyone else could have placed that.
Well,
that's
the conclusion he comes to eventually. But the conclusion he comes to first is someone stole my sign and planted it here. And then he dismisses that pretty quick.
Right. He ultimately gets to the conclusion of something really weird is going on here, because I must have placed that sign. What do you guys think is going on here?
He's Kakabon.
Oh.
Wow. Remember whenever I said I think Trevor's really been on the ball with these predictions this book? He might have it, but I may have
to
figure out how that.
Sorry, finish your thought, Paul.
Oh, I was going to say I'm trying to wrap my head around how that can logically work, because we don't like we have some funky time stuff going on, but not like I myself am going back in time. Not that kind of funky time stuff. So
I was going to ask a clarifying question to try and dig at exactly that. And I think I may have asked you this exact same question when we were talking the Kakabon stuff before. Are you going down the line of he literally is the exact same Kakabon, or is this reincarnation of Kakabon, or is this he's the spiritual successor of Kakabon?
I have no idea.
Fair enough.
Okay. That's a good question. I was going to say it would make sense to me, you know, he has so much of this like reverence for Patchy or whatever, that whatever shard or Patchy or whatever's going on here, it could make sense to me that this could almost be Patchy's story, right? That's how his whole thing is, this oral tradition of this legendary Kakabon and the Dakwara and all this stuff. I mean, I don't know why, but it could be a cyclical thing that this planet does. He could be Kakabon number 17 or something like that. And they all, like every now and then, every 100 years or something, someone comes through here and is like, what the heck, my sign? Somebody stole my sign. And then they go through this like weird time loop thing. Maybe that's some kind of reincarnation thing. But I'm not convinced that that's right. That doesn't sound like, I don't know. I'm just not convinced. I don't think that's particularly what we're doing here.
Do you want my craziest theory?
Yes, of course.
Let's go. I was going to ask for theories at the end, but let's do it.
Well, this one specifically has to do with the sign. I had a crazy thought that I instantly banished about 2 days ago about this, but I'll share it anyway. Stormlight spoilers incoming, like Oathbringer or something like that. Spoilers. I thought, what if this is where the unmade who imitates things ran off to? The Midnight Mother. Do you remember her? And she does a bunch of imitation killings.
Yeah.
What if she's hanging out on Patchy and watches that night, and where Vothi and Dusk run through the jungle, and now has recreated it down here because she's bored? I don't know. But I had that thought, and then I instantly dismissed it. But there you go.
I have one other prediction. The only way, you know, the question is, nobody else knows this language. Nope, like Dusk is the only one. Except, hypothetically, couldn't Chrysalis have drawn this type of information? That was my thought.
Interesting.
Well, that's his thought too.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That was kind of the only other thing that made any sense to me. I guess that's supposed to be your first instinct, maybe. It's like nobody else has had that level of contact. So it should be some sneaky Chrysalis stuff. I keep believing in Chrysalis in a way, because it keeps setting up that Chrysalis is probably not trustworthy. And so I've kind of been like pushing against that for no reason other than I think that might be the twist.
Paul, I think you have a crab blind spot. I think you're a crab apologist.
I do. And I definitely don't want to be a sleepless apologist. Like, that's absolutely not what I want to do here. But I'm like, I don't know. Like, I really am lost for words. I'm like, we're on this planet where every bug can kill you, and the villain is the god of bugs or whatever, right? So, like, you know, are we just all in on that theme? I'm expecting a twist, which I probably don't need to expect a twist. And I don't know. I'm waiting to find, like, I don't know. This is a hard one to predict for me. This was a good, this like chapter is probably like my favorite of this episode. Cause I'm like, man, that really got my brain stirring big time. Like, if this is a mystery novel and this is like what happens, like the character has his own made up language and then comes across his own, like a sign with his own made up language. You're like nothing makes perfect sense as to how that could be there. So I feel quite lost. I'll be honest with you.
Just one thing I'll mention, and then we'll move on. But one thing to factor into your calculus: we are still in Shadesmar, and that's all I'll say. Is we are not solving puzzles in the physical world; we're trying to solve puzzles in the cognitive one. So chew on that as you wrestle with it.
The sign's there because he thinks it's going to be there because it's in the same pattern as last time. Is that what you're saying?
I suppose that would make the most sense, right? Oddly.
Which gets convoluted, right? Because he's confused by all this.
Right. He didn't think it was going to be there.
Right. But that is the thought train I want you going down as you keep reading.
Got it.
Okay, we get to our final chapter for this week, chapter 48. We've mentioned already the intensifier, dun dun dun, arrives via shipment. FedEx shows up.
Space laser.
It is a space laser. It is a cannon. I can't not think of Star Wars: The Last Jedi. Like the final battle of that, where they have the like Death Star cannon that they drag through the red salt planet, and it's like blasting down the fortress that they're hiding in. That's not the Last Jedi.
Oh yeah, it's definitely the Last Jedi. Their battering ram thing. Yeah,
yeah, that's what my headcanon paints this as. I think it's smaller than that.
I think it's on a scale of that to laser pointer. It's more laser pointer.
It's still big, though. It mentions Starling's take on it is, if I'm remembering correctly, it looked kind of like an old traditional cannon, but larger.
Right.
So it's big. It's as big as your car. And Danger is all excited because his new toy has arrived. Maybe
as big as your car.
Okay, mister, I drive a dump truck that's bigger than your house.
Speak for yourself.
It's bigger than my car.
I just have to say I really appreciate the scale of from the scale of Death Star to laser pointer. It's an excellent scale to measure things by. If you're talking about any kind of laser device.
Mm-hmm.
Deidre's very excited about his laser device, and he's setting it up to be able to blast at the big giant negative investiture snake that is not too far away. And dangers?
Question.
Yep.
Isn't negative investiture snake going to explode?
Good question.
If I got my rhythm of war correct, if we push a lot of investiture at a lot of negative investiture, doesn't that mean explosions? Like, have we thought this through?
I think you're remembering your rhythm of war correctly.
Does Daedra know his rhythm of war correctly?
He must have skimmed that chapter.
Did he read Navani's notes? Yes, no. Do the Mawish even care about negative investiture notes from Roshar? That's the better question. The answer's probably no.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
As soon as this weapon arrives, I'm sure you guys noticed, Daedra's tone changes.
Right, because now he has the cards.
He feels like he has got the full upper hand, if he didn't think he had that already. And he is not playing nice anymore. Tensions start to mount, and he goes, by the end of the chapter, into full-on threatening Starling and her crew.
Yeah. He hasn't done it to Dusk yet, but he does it to Starling immediately.
Not yet.
Yeah, doesn't he threaten to, like, cook her crew alive on the spot?
Yes.
I'm like, whoa, that got dark quick.
And that's what Starling says. She's like, you're going to violate all the prisoner of war treaties and your people are going to turn you in. And he pulls the whole, yes, but accidents happen.
I don't care. Right.
Diabolical.
Villain.
Yeah.
So I should probably take now to say that I would like to formally go on the record and apologize for the cliffhanger that I have left you on with this chapter in multiple aspects. There was no avoiding it. We had to split the chapter somewhere.
What? I'm sure this is revealed in the next chapter. You could have included 49.
Maybe. I could have.
So don't say there's no avoiding it.
There were not many ways I could have avoided this, and I had to take at least one opportunity to torture you guys with a bit of a cliffhanger. So, yes, I did force you to stop your reading here, kind of right in the middle of the action on both Dusk and Starling, and for that time, I'm sorry.
Okay, so at the end of chapter 49, no, the end of chapter 48? I'm sorry, we haven't read 49. The end of chapter.
Hopefully, have not read 49.
I have not read 49. At the end of whatever, Dusk hears a voice. Minor, major, Mistborn Air 1 spoilers. Incoming. Paul, are you familiar with the audiobook narrator drama from Mistborn Air 1?
From Mistborn Era 1.
Where the epigraphs are spoiled because of the voice that is used.
Oh, yes, the drama. I was thinking of, you know, there's like the dramatized, like Stormlight Archive thing. No. I was thinking of that in my head. But yes, I know what you're talking about with a voice, like the audiobook reader.
Correct.
Using the same voice.
Michael Kramer uses his character A voice for the epigraphs and it kind of spoils it. Did you get the same thing here? Because I did. And I don't know if we're smart enough to mislead now in 2025 or if we're making the same mistakes from 2009.
Well, I think, Trevor, if there's one thing I am, I think I'm fairly consistent. And just how back at that time when we were talking about this drama, I didn't really even notice from my listen through. Mm. I don't think I really noticed this time either. So I'm kind of missing it a little bit. So, and if I did pick up on it, I would say I'm sure they checked for that this time. Right?
I'm extremely curious now.
Yes. Because
I very much wanted to ask you since I hung you at this point, who you think this mysterious voice, who we only get one line from at the very end as Dusk turns around and someone says, I know you're lying. But yeah, interesting. So you guys have more information than I did at this point.
So you left us on this cliffhanger and the narrator, I don't remember his name, uses a very specific voice. And I don't know if it's intentional spoiler or they don't care or if it's intentional misleading. But it is not the voice of our most prevalent suspect, which would be Chrysalis. It is not, let me rephrase it this way, it is a distinctly feminine voice. And our top three female characters from the book are Chrysalis, Starling, well, and probably one of the other crew. But I'm skipping them. And Mother Frond. He reads the line in Mother Frond's voice.
That makes a little sense why I didn't specifically recognize it. But I do. You were definitely spinning a lot of ideas with Mother Fron from the beginning. Uh-huh. That's probably, I'm guessing that's what led you to whenever we're saying, oh, how is the sign here? That you're like, he's Kakuban, like, obviously, you know,
right.
Is like that same vein. And Mother Fron being, especially with oral, like traditional oral storytelling being emphasized, mm-hmm. like she's like the
lore mother.
At least, yeah, at least from our perspective, yeah, she's the lore mother here. So, man, so at the time you were thinking cultivation, right? Do you have an update? Are you thinking this is Mother Frond and Mother Frond is someone important?
Well, okay, there's two different answers to that question. I don't have an update. However, I no longer think that it's cultivation, but I do think that Mother Fron is important.
Okay, so you don't have an updated person who you think it is.
Correct.
Okay, so like, do you think it is going to be somebody we know, or is this a new important person? Like,
before we have this conversation,
okay,
we need to have the conversation of, do you think it's Mother Fron that just talked to Duskier?
Ooh. I feel like we're right on the cusp of so honestly, for probably the past 3-4 episodes, maybe not 4, 2 or 3 episodes, I've been trying to guess what the Sander Lanch could be about. Like, it doesn't feel super clear to me. It's not like we have this, you know, contest of champions or something that's hanging over our heads that we know it's going to revolve around. And so I haven't been certain. I know it's going to involve a perpendicularity. That's about it, you know, and our characters. So I feel like that'd be a very fitting twist. I could go on record saying, yeah, I think this is Mother Fron, because I think that's epic.
But okay. But if it is Mother Fron, are we not making the same mistakes from 2009?
Yes, aren't it's since 2009? Aren't we ready to get hurt again by now, Trevor?
to be fair, 99.99% of audiobook listeners probably didn't stop right at the end of chapter 48,
like you made us do, and here we are. So what do you want from me?
That's a fair point. That's a very fair point.
But yes, Ed. Good question.
I'm willing to just all in, risk it all now. This is Mother Fron. But my question is, who is Mother Fron? Because it's not this literal human, normal human, uninvested storyteller, right? If this is Mother Fron, right? If it's not, okay, whatever. It doesn't matter. Forget we said anything. But if this is, who is it? I mean, it's obviously a mystery. We're obviously not supposed to know, really. But I would be on the side that this is someone new and not someone we already know.
I would be willing to double down on my cultivation theory simply off the basis that we don't have our big Stormlight tie-in in this book yet. We have lots of Scadrial tie-ins. We've got some other random story tie-ins. We're missing our big Roshar cornerstone that Brandon loves to include now these days. So I might double down and say, this is Mother Fron. This is Corvellium. And she's an ex-dragon living on Patchy trying to help Dusk for some reason.
Okay. I'm gleefully smiling over here as we have this conversation. This is one of the most fun I think I've had so far in this book of
and then
watching you guys spin.
And then she argues, or she accuses him of lying, and that's how the end of the chapter, so I don't know if she's mad at him or something.
All right, Trevor, I have one more ridiculous idea to throw at you.
I'm ready.
That does not work. It's truly ridiculous. Okay, if Dusk is Kakuban, right? Let's say Dusk is Kakuban, and this legend is about himself somehow.
Okay,
doesn't make sense. Then could Mother Frond be Starling somehow?
No.
Next
question.
I agree. It's a bit ridiculous, but I wanted to voice it because it entered my little brain, and that's what this podcast is about.
What if Mother Frond created the story of Kakuban so that Dusk would then go live it? That's where I'm leaning. Where Kakuban never really existed, but we've created this story so that Dusk feels he can accomplish this. And Kakuban is fake.
I guess that solves the reincarnation time travel dilemma that I'm having of, like, that doesn't work here in the Cosmere.
Your theme is giving me Shallan paints people into who she wants them to be vibes.
Right.
We spin the myth so that you can become the hero.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Okay. Wow. Well, it's good to say that we've figured it out, and now all we have to do is read and.
So Mother Frond is also Shallan. Is that what we just said?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where we were landing.
Okay.
I think solved. We don't even need to read the rest of the book. We're just done right there.
Well, wait, hold on. I have one other question. This would be a little ridiculous. Have we seen Hoid in this book yet?
No, he's been spoken of.
Right. Yes, Master Hoid. Yeah, that's right. Starling talks about Hoid all the time. Maybe Hoid is Mother Frond.
Well, let's use that right there to actually transition into the last little bit of this episode I wanted to do. I'm about to send you off to read the rest of the book. We are going to do our next... We still have two more episodes to cover the rest of the book, but we're going to do something we've done in the past when we finish a book, and we are going to speak freely spoilers through the end of the book starting next episode. So if you are reading this book along with us, please go finish the book after this episode before you listen to our next one. So with that said, what do you guys have for me for theories for the end of this book, starting with that one right there? Are we going to see actual Hoid, or is he only going to be a name drop that Starling keeps referencing?
I feel that Hoid being gone is setting the stage for all future Cosmere books, and so should not and will not be resolved in this book. And he has disappeared recently, and any future Cosmere book set in this time frame is a C-tier quest to, Hoid's missing. We should find him at some point. So no, it will not be answered.
Well, Trevor sounded awfully logical in his, but I'm going to disagree with his logic. And I'm going to say we are going to see Hoid because Starling has talked about him all book. There is going to be some, like, I don't know, short conversation or short moment at the end. But at some point, Hoid is going to... I'm going to even say Hoid is going to speak to Starling, like, they're, in some capacity. It would be kind of funny if he doesn't. He, like, talks to Dusk or something briefly, and then Starling's like, who was that? Or something, something like that. And Dusk's like, I don't know. Anyways, I do think we will see Hoid, even though I don't know how. Yeah, other than him maybe being Mother Frond, which I don't expect to be the case, but would be really funny.
Or the Daquara. He could be the Daquara.
Wow. I don't think he could be the Daquara.
No?
But I don't think so, no. I would say he's not the Daquara.
Pity.
What happens when you hit Hoid with the giant laser pointer?
No.
Hoid dies.
I feel like wouldn't Starling know something about that or something?
She apparently does know Hoid fairly well. She's made quite a few references to
Uncle Hoid or Master Hoid. It's not Uncle. That's Uncle Frost. My bad.
She keeps saying things like, "Oh yeah, Hoyt and I have got out of worse scrapes than this before," kind of stuff. So, see,
yeah,
I get the vibe that they know each other somewhat well.
They certainly do. And so I don't think Hoyt is the Daquara for. I will go on record saying that. Well, bold. I did predict that Mother bold. Frond is speaking to Dusk here, and that probably is an important character. I will say that Hoyt is not the Daquara. So, but if that were the case, Trevor, then you're saying we would be meeting Hoyt, right?
Unfortunately. Although I don't remember what I said at the beginning of this book hedging for the predictions. Your bets. What did I say for the predictions? That Hoyt is in this book?
Oh, that's in my notes. Hold on.
I think I said that he is because he's in every book.
You're just hedging your bets, like going the opposite so that one will be right, won't it?
Right. It's called spinning plates. And yes, as long as you keep one in the air, you look impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I think that's my prediction. I do think we're going to see Hoyt. Should we go ahead and talk about, like, do you want us to say, like, what do we think is going to.
Yeah, give me a couple. Give me another one or two kind of big predictions for end of the book.
Okay. I feel like one of our characters will die somehow, like a member of Starling's crew, and we'll be supposed to feel bad about it. But we're like, well, we didn't really know them that well, depending on the person. Because I feel like that's how Brandon Sanderson does deaths in his book. It's a secondary or tertiary character. Not always, but a lot of the times. I don't think either Starling or Dusk is going to die here. I could see Dusk kind of shutting himself off from his planet or, you know, some way sealing himself off, living in isolation, but I don't think he's going to die.
I do remember the death predictions for you and I at the beginning of the book. You said zero and I said two.
So. That's right. So far we've had zero, right? Like no yes. one's died yet.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. I mean, we do have, I don't remember the case for that. Was that deaths as in hero, like protagonist deaths? Like if Dager dies, does that count?
I assume that would count, yes.
Okay.
Any significant character.
Okay. I could see maybe like Dager dying or a more secondary character. But I don't think any of our main characters are gonna die, like the main two. We've gotta see Vothi again at some point this book, right?
No.
You don't think so?
Not if we close the perpendicularity from our side and never see her again.
I suppose that's fair. I feel like we might get a quick shift of perspective. Like I feel like we are going to maybe not Dusk is going to talk to Vothi again, but I feel like we have to see her in some brief mention, but maybe that is old news. Like we certainly have bigger fish to fry. So I'm not holding too strong to that, but I feel like we should see Vothi again in like passing or, you know, I don't know if there's, I haven't looked, I don't know if there's an epilogue or anything to this book, but I could totally see it like epilogue, like, and Vothi is dealing with some, like lame political stuff that you don't really care about. See y'all later. You know, that's all folks.
And here's Vothi on a political podcast talking about her views.
Exactly.
She's on the campaign trail trying to get reelected.
Yes. That's like the situation I think we would get reconnected with Vothi, if at all, is more of a mention and a comment is all.
Back on Hoyt, I did find our notes from our very first episode on this book where I asked you directly, will Hoyt appear at all? And my notes are rather cryptic, but it looks like, Paul, you said that yes, Hoyt would appear and that he would appear as an animal such as a bug or a fish.
I said extra points if he's a bug or a fish.
And Trevor said that he would appear as a late cameo.
Hmm.
Still could potential still for be that.
The case, yeah.
I feel like all of these are still on the cards.
We have had so much bug stuff. It would be so epic if that is right and he
late comes cameo as a bug.
Then that would be like, oh, that'd be so peak.
Like, that is also amazing. The Daquara.
Yes. Yeah.
What were other questions that we answered?
So the big one was the, when will Dusk speak to Starling? We've dissected that. You guys already talked about the, how many characters will die. There were two other questions I asked you. I said, how many planets will we visit?
Oh yeah. I missed this one.
Paul said 3. Trevor, you said 4.
Yep.
We've been to 2, right?
Arguably 3.
Two and a bit.
2 and a quarter.
And then the other question, the last one was, how many familiar characters will we see or hear mentioned? And
oh yeah, I said like 15 or something.
I haven't been counting, actually. We probably should for the end. But yeah, Trevor, you said 12 and Paul, you said 5.
I think we're closer to 12 than we are to 5. I'll put it that way.
Did we count shards in that? Because they just like spit out like 12 shard names.
No, but we are counting like Crow and Zysis and
Huyo.
Yes. Frost, Huyo. Okay.
Yep.
That's fair.
And Mother Frond, whose cultivation, which we'll find out next
if,
episode.
If it is cultivation, that certainly counts. Yeah.
All right. My big prediction for the end of the book. There is a perpendicularity. We go through it, or Dusk solo goes through it, and finds not first of the sun, but second of the sun. And it is an even more primitive civilization than his. And he takes it upon himself to defend said civilization before the Malwish can discover it and destroys the perpendicularity to defend them.
Wow.
My prediction for the end of the book, there's one thing we didn't talk about a ton, and that does happen in this episode, and that's Dusk realizes he knows how to navigate the Emberdark and nobody else does.
Right.
And I feel like that is the direction we're going to go. I see it going one of two ways. Either he ends up living semi-heartbreakingly in Shadesmar, navigating the Emberdark. Maybe in a very future book, we get some like, oh, we find this map and he's like mapped out the entire Emberdark or something like that. You know, I don't think that's the case. I think what we might have him do, actually, this could also like pair with Vothi in some ways. After conflict is resolved, he is like the guide, the leader to navigate, to plot out the Emberdark and to make it habitable, is not the right word, understand it and be able to navigate it and wayfind in it. I think he's going to be used for that purpose. I think that'd be my guess.
If he does live the rest of his days in the Emberdark, I feel like the happy version of that is he just becomes the navigator on the Dynamic. Right? Like, he just flies off into the infinite plane with Starling, and they just become a happy crew.
Yeah, there we go. I was totally picturing him on his little boat again, but right. I think that also makes sense, so...
That's a sad version.
Yeah.
All right. Any final thoughts before we head into the end of the Isles of the Emberdark?
Sock's gonna die.
Oh.
Wow. Does that count as a character death?
Yes.
100%.
Okay. That's fair.
If R2-D2 died in Star Wars, it would absolutely be a character death.
I was gonna reference that. Thank you.
That's a good point. Yeah, I fully agree. Okay. Yeah. You're probably right about that one. I totally forgot about that.
All right. Well, let's go off and read it. I'm sending you guys into quite a bit more reading than we've done in the previous episodes, and I'm doing that a little bit on purpose. I really enjoyed binge reading this book, which was actually something I had never gotten to do with a Brandon Sanderson book before. And so I wanted to give you guys a little bit of a taste of that with this book, of reading chunks of it quickly together. So from this point on, you are good to finish the book. For next week, for episode 288, we are going to talk about chapters 49 through 55. But as I mentioned earlier, We will be open spoilers through the end of the book. So we will be talking all of it. If you're reading along with us here, please read to the end of the book, all the way to the end, and then come back next week for us to talk specifically about the events in 49 through 55. And with that, that'll wrap us up. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Trevor.
Looking forward to it.
Toodles.